This is James Robertson of Syncom Systems with episode 33 of Industry Misinterpretations, recorded today, April 30th, 2007, at Small Talk Solutions here in Toronto, Canada. We had an interesting episode today because we had all four of us, myself, Michael Lucas-Smith, Dave Buck, and James Savage, all in the same room at the same time in the same place for the first time ever, even though this is the 33rd episode of the podcast. We had a good session discussing some of what happened today at the show, including the coding contest, along with our normal rambling about whatever happened to come up. Hope you enjoy this podcast. I'll talk to you again at the end of the episode. All right. This is James Robertson with Industry Misinterpretations here at Small Talk Solutions. I've got Michael Lucas-Smith, James Savage, and Dave Buck actually in the room, all of us together for the first time for one of these. And we've got what can only be described as a motley crew in the audience.
That's your cue to make some noise.
You feel they're slow on the uptake. They didn't really get it until you explained it to them. And, of course, he's jet-lagged, so you're really slow.
Yeah.
So... Dave, say hi.
Hi. Dave Buck here, and James Savage.
Good evening.
This is unusual. This is the first time we've ever all sat down together for a podcast in the same place.
So I guess the first thing we wanted to do is ask if anybody had any questions, comments, things they wanted to ask us, because we came to this kind of blind. We don't really have anything that vaguely resembles a topic. I could ramble for a while, or I could just mention Buckage.
Don't we always ramble for a while?
We've got Andres running the Small Talk Solutions coding contest right now, and he's staring at his screen intently as the different players play.
Yeah, so you can tell the tension is building in the air as the screen, which isn't being projected anywhere, runs in front of his eyeglasses.
The contest is rigged.
Somebody in the audience just said the contest is rigged.
You're live. Go ahead.
All right, well, as James said before, I'm running the contest. One of the finalists could not finish the solution, but I guess I might have made it a little bit too difficult. But two players are fighting for it right now, although from the scores it looks like it might just be a matter of waiting. Just as a side, as I see numbers go, running the contest... It's quite an experience, and earlier today we had some issues. That I had tested the server earlier, and somehow it managed to work on my laptop, but it failed in all of the participants' laptops. And it was particularly funny because I would take a participant's image, bring it to my laptop, it would work, and then take the exact image that worked in my laptop to the participant machine, and it wouldn't work. It turned out to be there was a slight problem in the image. It had a loose live server in it with no UI, so it would fight over the server that should have been answering the HTTP requests, and that was causing the problem. Eventually, it was fixed. And so here we are after a little bit of a rough beginning, but hopefully this will be over soon.
And since neither Jan nor Troy are here, we've decided that it's Martin's fault.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Andres,
yes.
Can you talk about what the problem is for the coding contest?
Can Travis have some blame?
We're always happy to blame Travis. As a matter of fact, all the extra blame goes to Travis.
Okay. The problem was based on the memory game. The memory game is one in which you have a set of cards facing down on a table and you flip two at a time, and if the symbol matches, then you take the pair out, and you do that until you run out of covered cards. Now, the thing is, to make it a little bit more interesting, I thought that it would be fun to make players or participants play the game through a computer, and the computer would also remove the notion of where the tokens were. So essentially, the computer knows internally where it got the symbols from, but it doesn't expose that information to participants. So the participants must now propagate the information of where the symbols were, as known by the computer, into the computer without violating that rule, because should something illegal, like trying to solve a card with itself were to happen, the computer would crash. And that causes a penalty for them, because the idea is then for them to schedule instructions for this computer so that they can solve the game in a minimum of instructions and cycles. Now, for the finals, since this is over now, I introduced a number of changes, and I got the problem actually from watching myself play a memory game that is, there was a cross between the memory game and Tetris. So as you take out cards, you free up your screen, but at the same time, more rows of cards are coming from the bottom, and you have to hurry up, because if they reach the top, then you lose. And what I noticed was that as the game got more and more difficult, what the first strategy would be, well, there are not many symbols, so I can just, you know, open any pairs, and by chance they will be the same, and I don't have to remember many anyway, and that would be a proper strategy. However, as there were more and more symbols, I would forget, or I would start making mistakes all the time. And therefore, I thought maybe a better strategy when there's too many symbols is to just remember a few, and then just remember a few with their positions very well, but a few, and then just try to find, as quickly as possible, a match somewhere. And that's what I tried to reproduce with this game, and in particular with the twists I introduced for the finals. First of all, the computer has less memory available to mimic the 7 plus minus 2 rule of how many things you can remember at the same time. Also, the computer now makes mistakes just as you would. So the further away the slot is from the registers, the more and more likely it becomes that the computer will make a mistake when it uncovers, mimicking what happens to you when, oh, that's like the nth symbol I remember, and you try to fetch it again and it's not there. And also, I changed the instruction cycles for some of the registers and how the computer would uncover cards into the main registers. I would be able to solve pairs based on, perhaps a little bit of trying to complicate things a little bit, stressing perhaps the characteristics of finalists' programs' resistance to change. And also, in a way, to mimic what happens when you play, because typically you use one hand and not the other. So this is still going. And, well, I would like to express my gratitude to all these people that played, both the finalists that are here and the people that could not make it to the finals. Unfortunately, this year, I had to let go of some people, because the rules have been that there would be three finalists. It was really hard. Hopefully we can fix that for next year.
And next year what we'll do is the people who don't make it to the finals will be trouted.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Yeah. So it was really hard to write the post in my blog where I describe, well, you know, what am I going to do? This program's work, and it feels really horrible to have to, in a way, I reject something that works and is valuable. So hopefully we will be able to fix that for next year. Also, for whoever organizes this, note it's a lot of work. For whoever organizes this next...
So who are the...
It's a lot of work.
Who are the finalists?
It was great.
Who are the finalists this year?
The finalists this year were Leandro Caniglia and Valeria Murgia from Buenos Aires. They are a couple, hence they play together, because otherwise, if they were to play on their own, they would cheat. Of course, I'm quoting you, Suzanne. Thank you. Right, the pair programming, right. This is exactly. Showing the power of pair programming and extreme programming practices. Michael Lucas Smith, these two finalists are participating right now. And Niall Ross also made it to the finals. But this is where, again, it feels bad. It is kind of tough. But unfortunately, perhaps I made the finals a little bit too difficult, and he could not produce a program to play now.
So, Andreas.
Yeah.
So be honest with us. How much did you make the problem difficult so that you could, say, return the favor for Michael, since he ran the contest that he won last year?
Well, no, I didn't take it that way. Actually, what I found was that it's very hard to judge what will be difficult
So I got
Because you work with it so much that you think, oh, it's obvious, this and that. But in reality, it's very difficult to judge where something will be hard or easy. For example, I thought the qualifier round would take more time or more effort from the participants. And yet it didn't. The feedback that I got was that it was actually kind of too easy. And now for the finals, it appears that it might have been a little bit too hard. And, let's see. Michael's program has been running for a while, and it's up to 700,000 cycles in a single game and 40,000 instructions. But the registers are not moving.
They're not moving.
So I have a feeling it may have some sort of infinite loop of some sorts.
Oh well.
Well, he's not even sure what day it is, so.
Yeah.
I guess I could keep it running. On the other hand, Leandro's player finished.
Best out of three.
So I think. What do you think? Should I stop this or?
Yeah, if
I mean,
it's
it,
not
it doesn't seem to.
It's not moving. It's not going to start moving magically at this point. I would say.
Yeah. So I guess I'll just stop
what
this.
What score did they get?
Leandro got 114,000.
Yeah, well, that's well ahead of where I was as well, so congratulations on that. I'd say cancel my program there.
Okay. Congratulations, Leandro wins. Leandro and Valeria win.
Yeah. The moral of the story?
Yeah, the moral of the story coming from the peanut gallery is that the power of pair programming wins. This is my only chance to get back in management here, so, you know.
What are you talking about? You are management.
My manager.
Oh.
So, yes, we have a winner.
We have the official stick prizes to hand out.
Oh, yes, that
Gary
is true.
Is going to come up?
The executive director is here to help.
That's true. Mr. Heave, Mr. President Heave, if you could do the honors here.
Yeah. You can even give him a microphone.
Of course.
Yes, as the newly elected executive director of Smalltalk Industrial Council, it is an honor. It is an honor for me to congratulate you, the pair programming team, for this wonderful success. And I appreciate very much that, again, Argentina won. So, as my secretary helps me now, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. The problem with pair programming is...
Now we see how it works. The woman gets the prize.
Yeah.
Have you won one of these and won the Nano yet?
There's now an intense negotiation for second and third place based on the prizes.
Yep.
That's the Nano.
How bad
are
the
programs?
So they retreat after the fact. Yes. I will give.
Okay, quick, give it to Michael.
Congratulations, Michael, for a second.
I think we should have staged a death match right here in the middle of the room.
I'm not sure that's so fair. Neil doesn't have
Neil,
his wristbands on anymore.
Yeah.
I could get hurt.
I would also like to add, I'd like to say thanks to Andres for organizing the contest this year.
Oh, yes.
Yes, thank you, Andres.
And now he wins a trip to Argentina.
Just to relay that, Suzanne said that Andres wins a trip to Argentina.
But he is stuck with Suzanne on that trip.
We had some interesting talks here at Small Talk Solutions today already. We had this morning's, it's kind of a keynote.
Yeah, we had the Ruby on Rails for Small Talkers talk, which was interesting because Chad Fowler got through maybe, what, one-fourth or so of his slides? Because at first, people started interrupting him to explain how Ruby was wrong in its syntax because, you know, of course, in Smalltalk, we have arrogance down much better than the Ruby guys do.
Yep.
And then that mostly got back on track for the Ruby on Rails section, but that was actually an interesting talk, I thought. Dave, what did you think?
I enjoyed it very much. I think Chad did an amazing job considering the stresses from questions in the room.
I like the way he ran it, actually. He was just sort of going through the different parts of the language and kind of bouncing off the audience to see what they thought of the way Ruby did things compared to Smalltalk.
Well, Dave, how does giving a presentation at Smalltalk Solutions compare to the type of classes that you give? I mean, how similar or different is it?
At the classes, people tend to sit back a little bit more and just listen. I think at the presentations, especially the one I saw with Chad, people are up and talking and questioning, and there's all sorts. There's much more interaction going on. So,
when you get to the point where people start explaining how Ruby block closure syntax is just obviously incorrect, and this devolves into a conversation over who's more arrogant, then you know that the conversation's a little different than your typical class.
I think we got some very good quotes out of the guy, actually. Can anyone remember some of his great quotes, especially about Java? And
well, you could refer Java, to my you Java, could refer to my blog.
Java is for stupid programmers, I think is what he quoted.
But Java programmers aren't necessarily stupid.
Java is designed for stupid programmers, not to say that Java programmers are stupid. The language assumes that the Java programmers... Right.
And, of course, one of the highlights of the presentation was that Michael was given the designation of that guy.
Yes, that guy.
Hold on. Who did he trade it with? He and Bruce both traded that guy back and forth.
There was that other guy who wanted to rewrite all of Ruby in Smalltalk and was asking questions about how they could go about rewriting all of Ruby in Smalltalk.
Personally, I think it's not a coincidence that both Bruce and Michael have spent obviously more time than others, but in Australia, and they're both that guy.
During Chad's talk, he was talking about the arrogance of the Ruby community, saying that we're opinionated and we're arrogant. And I think my comment was, well, we invented that first.
Well, no, Alan was the one who got up and said, I think we have arrogance down.
Yeah.
So what did you think of Joseph's talk?
Well, I wasn't at that. I was.
Oh, you were here
during the coding contest.
You were down here trying to figure out what the bug was in the server.
Yep.
So, Dave, which one were you? Were you there?
I was at Joseph's talk. I think he gave a great talk. Two of the points that he brought up, I'd heard him talk about before on our podcast. So the retrospective coherence.
I love that.
Talked about before.
Yeah, we did a podcast a few months ago, and that came up there. But, yeah, it was good to see the talk. It was good to see the slides. I think the slides, the one with it, were very well done. I thought he did a very personable and very affable kind of presentation. I think that he talked to the group well. He seemed to get along with the audience well. I thought it was very well done. I liked it a lot.
Yes, he started off the conference wearing a T-shirt that he had, shall we say, follicular challenged, and the T-shirt said Skinheads for Smalltalk.
Yes,
I think that started years ago, actually, with Alan Knight coming into work one day. He had long hair at one point, believe it or not. And one day he comes into work at the Object People, totally bald. And he said, I think I'll start off a group called Skinheads for Smalltalk.
Well, I think I'm going to stop you right there and just claim that it's impossible to even consider Alan with long hair.
I can't believe it or not.
That's it. I need to. The podcast needs to be recessed, and I need a strong course of vodka right now.
He held it in a ponytail in back, actually.
Okay, I'm now disabled. Don't expect anything that even resembles an intelligent decision out of me for a month.
We asked him. The comment from Suzanne was, "We never do."
I think my daughter and my wife would both kill me.
We asked Alan at the time why he cut his hair. He said, "I had to do something with it, and I figured I'd do something dramatic. Anything else would be anticlimactic."
Well, now that we've taken a segue down into the land of the Skinheads for Smalltalk, so James, you were at the session with Joseph. What did you think?
I was there for the first half of the session before I came here to where the contest was going on, so I could work on the jobs report. This is my first exposure to the Scrum methodology, and more importantly, I guess, more my exposure to the theory behind it. And obviously from the way he was describing things, they were trying to take, if you'll excuse the expression, the best practices of the past best practices to try and come up with something that would work where the others may have failed. And so the majority of what I listened to was the history behind what led to where they were.
Okay.
One thing I liked about the talk was how he brought stories of projects that he'd worked on and things that they did and how that worked out. One story he was talking about for Nokia, they had groups working in England North
England,
America.
England, Seattle, and Singapore, I think it was.
England, Seattle, and Singapore. And they were using an extreme programming style where they would have test cases and code, version them off at the end of their shift and hand it off to the next team. And then the next team takes over the full control of the code and hands it off to the next team. And in between them, they had video conferences to sort of get people up to speed on where they were and what was going on and just do the handoff, and the next team takes control of it.
Was it the next team in a different time zone?
In a different time zone, eight hours
different each time. I mean, I've seen a small, very tiny scale version of this when I've done collaborative projects with Michael, where after the end, where I've gotten up after sleeping a night and taken a look at what he's done to the Swallow client, for instance, and typically not recognized whatever it was that the code looked like.
Yeah, and I'd similarly come back from work and see what James had done through the night because he never sleeps. And discovering that the program had actually quadrupled in size with 50 new functionalities.
Yeah, well, that's bottom feeder with 15 new functions and 25,000 new menu items.
So in another 10 minutes, the Gemstone Birds of a Feather will be starting off a few doors down.
With special news.
There's special news from Monty, who we could bug to give us an early preview, but he probably won't do that.
Well, you know, this podcast doesn't go live for a while yet.
Yeah, it won't be out till next week.
Yeah, but I would have to kill everybody in the room if I
spilled it. But I already know, so let me say something.
as long as you exclude the people at this table, I'm good with that.
Well, there's going to be a free version of Gemstone S that's free even for commercial use, smaller version of Gemstone S. And anybody who wants to find out about it can come to the meeting two doors down and get the details.
And those details will be posted up on the website?
Copies of them here. They'll be posted on the on the emailing list. I don't have a way to get to the website today, but they'll be sent out on our list and whatever other lists. I think Martin will probably post to the VW list and Dale will post to the Squeak list.
I'm sure we'll be blogging that later.
Yeah. I'm sure news will spread fast. Probably this podcast will be out of date by the time it goes up.
Very good. So Gemstone will be available even for commercial use for free.
Yeah, which is
a version of Gemstone.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool news.
Yeah, I mean, we use Gemstone where I work on contract in Ottawa, and it makes a huge difference to our environment. It really eliminates what people normally run into is the object-relational mismatch.
But then you've got this, there's a presentation coming up here at Smalltalk Solutions talking about glass.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned that briefly before. And it sounds like Seaside's running inside Gemstone S. Is that correct? We've got Monty coming back.
Monty's coming back to set us straight again.
Yeah, that's correct. What Glass is, everybody knows that web applications for years have been developed in a LAMP method, which is Linux, Apache, MySQL, Perl, PHP, or Python. And so somebody came up with the brilliant idea that we should have Glass, which is Gemstone, Linux, Apache, Seaside, and Smalltalk. So that's the five technologies that we use. And what we did, which will be actually in James and Dale's talk on Wednesday, I think at 1 o'clock, is a description of what we did to do that. There's actually a site live now that we have that's actually running using that technology. And the difference is that we're not running an HTTP server in Squeak. We're actually running a real Apache, and we've implemented Fast CGI Gemstone, etc. So it's actually and the purpose for doing that was to make it acceptable to people who actually want to put this into a corporate environment. They aren't going to like it if you're saying, well, you know, you got to run Swazoo. Those guys would all no mal intent to people who developed Swazoo, but the corporate guys like it a lot better if you're running Apache and Linux.
It's just one less impediment to throw people if you tell them you're doing something and something they know well, like Apache. The rest of it doesn't sound so weird as long as you've got that out of the way.
Yeah, and why did we need to reinvent the world? I mean, we've certainly got people know how to deal with Apache, make it scale, put load balancing stuff in front of it. And even more importantly, by doing Apache, you get SSL for free, so we didn't have to do that. So it's actually going to work out pretty nice. Come to the talk on Wednesday.
Thanks, Monty.
Thank you. In terms of announcements as well, I put an announcement on my blog this morning that Cimbron will be developing some Smalltalk courses to deliver on CD-ROM. What I'm finding is that for a lot of people who want to have small talk training, it's hard for them to get enough people to send on a course. The time frame that they need the people trained in is fairly small, and it's hard to orchestrate multiple companies taking courses all at the same time. So after working on this podcast series and also working on the screencast for the Small Talk and Industry video, I felt that those worked out well enough that I should try and put some training onto CD-ROM in screencast form and podcast form with exercises, and we can sell those as a CD-ROM series, and then people can take the training at their own pace, at their own site. So hopefully that'll help a lot of people out to learn Smalltalk. I'm also trying to target developers in C-sharp and in Java to learn more advanced object-oriented techniques than they've seen before. What I will be doing is saying the first part of the course will teach you Smalltalk, and then we will go through those other advanced techniques using Smalltalk as your language, because it's an easier development environment than what you're used to with Java. You can learn these concepts better and then apply them over to the other environments that you're developing in. So that should be an interesting experiment as well, to see if that takes off.
Well, it'll also be an interesting piece of feedback to get to see what the Java and C-sharp people think of using Smalltalk as a learning environment, because I don't have a lot of experience seeing what those kinds of people think of Smalltalk, because all of my training time doing Smalltalk training was back when people's languages were either COBOL or C, and I think the problems that people have crossing over from Java and C-sharp are probably very distinctly different than the ones I had experience with.
So, James, are you sort of holding back asking the question whether or not the CDs will be DRM-free?
Well, if Dave puts DRM on them, I'll just have to trout him.
No trout necessary. The CDs will be DRM-free. Hope to have those available in the fall sometime.
And Michael's been very quiet because I think he's not really aware what day it is.
Well, you know, I was actually wondering, looking at the people here, if anybody had something they wanted to say, because there are plenty of people here who have interesting stories, and it's very difficult for us to organize podcasts with everyone. If anybody wanted to volunteer to actually come up and say something of interest.
We could ask Travis to tell us about Cairo.
Briefly? He's got a stunned look on his face.
This is where I need a camera. That picture would have been perfect.
It's really cool.
He said it's really cool. And okay, I guess that's
very useful.
Well,
Travis.
That's as much as we'll get out of Travis. Okay. Well, does anybody have any questions for us before we wrap this up then? Boy, it's dinner time, I can tell that.
Yeah.
You ever see that Bugs Bunny cartoon with the little frog that always shuts up whenever anybody's looks at him?
Yeah.
That's sort of what it sounded like there for a minute.
Well, that was as quiet as the room's been this whole time, yes.
Yeah.
As soon as we asked for feedback. All right. Well, then we'll hand it over to James, and he's going to give us the Smalltalk jobs report for this week.
Well, on this report, I'm concentrating on the positions being offered by a couple of the companies that are here at the conference. First, with the largest set, Precision System Design. They're looking to fill both permanent and contract positions. For the permanent positions, we've got San Jose, California. They're looking for a Smalltalk developer with VisualWorks. Atlanta, Georgia, a Gemstone Smalltalk developer with VisualWorks. Secaucus, New Jersey, a junior Smalltalk developer with VisualWorks. Springfield, New Jersey, Smalltalk developer with SQL. New York, New York, they're looking for a Smalltalk and Java developer. And if you have financial industry experience, it's considered a plus. Also in New York, they're looking for a Smalltalk developer who has a mathematics degree or a math-heavy background, for example, physics. Cleveland, Ohio.
What are they programming in Elastolab?
Well, my guess is that there's probably multiple positions available at for the capital team, because in New York, J.P. Morgan seems to be sort of a small talk black hole. Nothing escapes it, with the exception of Andreas.
And the math involved in simulated physics is very similar to the math required for pricing financial instruments.
Really?
So it's the same sort of technique.
We might have to talk about that another time.
Yeah. Okay. Cleveland, Ohio. They're looking for a Smalltalk developer where Java and SQL Server are considered pluses. And Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they're looking for a junior programmer analyst, and the pluses there include Java or C-sharp and a mathematics background.
I'm not sure where Java and SQL Server can ever be considered pluses.
Now, Precision also has contract positions available. And as a reminder, any contractor that works through Precision will get 80% of the rate that Precision bills to the client.
And who said we weren't ad-supported?
Yeah.
And New York, they've got senior Smalltalk developer with math or physics background, maybe related to the same stuff as before. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, senior developer with math skills. Minneapolis, Minnesota, another senior developer, and Java and SQL Server there is also a plus. Omaha, Smalltalk consultant with relational database experience. Cleveland, Ohio, they're looking for someone with web services, and visual age is considered a plus there. Secaucus, they're looking for a gemstone DBA with strong Unix skills. San Jose, California, they're looking for a Smalltalk developer with documentation skills. Okay. Austin, Texas, they're looking for a Smalltalk developer where Java, C++, and C# are considered pluses. The other one that I'm going to talk about here is Key Technologies. They're up in Walla Walla, Washington, and they're looking to fill both a Software Engineer 1 and a Software Engineer 2 position with programmers that have experience with Smalltalk, Java, OOAD, C++, Extreme Programming, Distributed Architectures, Control Systems, Embedded Software, Image Processing, Linux, Microsoft Windows, and real-world apps.
They're not picky, are they?
now say that five times fast.
I'm actually curious why they're looking for ones and twos.
VisualWorks is considered a plus on that. Now, for those who don't know what Key Technologies does, they do food sorting software.
I was going to say experience with food would be a plus.
Experience eating French fries.
But they write software that in very fast and definitely real time will sort through food that is going through the manufacturing systems and help the companies that are manufacturing the food determine whether or not a piece of food, like a French fry or a potato chip or something along those lines, falls out of spec. And if it does, they immediately have to say, get rid of it. And from all the descriptions he's made, that's a very interesting and exciting field if you've never known anything about that before. So these are just a few of the positions that are listed in the Smalltalk Jobs database. And for more details on these, of course, visit my blog, and you can be directed to where the public directory is of the database. Good luck with your job hunting.
And if you want to find James's blog, go to syncomsmalltalk.com/userblogs, and then down at the bottom, just find his name, click on it, and there you go.
And I would also like to say thank you to James for all the hard work that he's done with the jobs report. He's put an awful lot of time into it, and he's now starting to get some help. And I'd like to thank him for all the effort he's put into it. So thank you very much, James.
Thank you, James. All right. Well, we're going to call that a wrap. Thanks, everybody, for showing up.
See you next time.
And that was a wrap on today's episode. I hope to have a few more interviews scheduled this week while I'm at Smalltalk Solutions here in Canada. I know I'm talking to the folks from Penn State tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have a few other things lined up. If not, I'll see you again soon on a future episode of Industry Misinterpretations. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.